All right, it is indeed Saturday, and you're listening to the Saturday Afternoon Show. I'm Tom Moreau, and we're going to turn things over to Sam Sebrin, who was the artist in residence at Wave Farm in the past 2 weeks, I guess. Sam is going to tell us what he uncovered in his research about transmission art and radio art. Sam, welcome to Wave Farm.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be here. And let people hear the results of the work I've been doing out here. And we'll get to that probably in the 5 to 6 hour. First of all, it's kind of weird to be talking or with you, or I feel like interviews in a way are so sort of random off the bat. Like if we were talking tomorrow, I might say something totally different, but let me just give an attempt today for a brief description to start off with of what I was just working on, which is called research. And the idea was that I wanted to get a concentrated amount of time to really immerse myself into the library here at Wave Farm and learn more about transmission arts and radio history, and in the process collect some of the information that I was coming across and try to assemble it into some form of presentation that could hopefully help others understand the transmission arts medium and learn more about radio in general. And so basically that's like a pretty extreme undertaking. It would probably actually take several lifetimes to create a real documentary on radio and transmission arts. So I ended up having to kind of approach it as with a certain degree of chance and randomness, because I had a finite amount of time. It ended up being a handful of books that I chose and worked on reading and gathering information from, as well as audio recordings throughout the history of radio and transmission arts. So you can imagine sort of the immensity of that amount of material, and how do you hone that down to what I ended up making, which is an hour-long presentation. So again, it pretty much became an exercise in chance, and combined with, as I was digging deeper, finding the elements that were mainly of interest to me. So I started getting really interested in the idea of language itself and words and spoken word as it relates to the history of transmission arts. I started getting interested in the politics of radio itself. You know, for instance, homemade pirate radio versus mass media corporate radio. The idea of freedom of speech as it connects to radio. I also have a background in, you know, Tom, I gotta say, like, at this point I really, really do not like the word noise as a terminology. I really think that term needs to be retired. I think it's almost at this point just a euphemism for mediocrity. But for lack of a better term, and in my own vocabulary laziness, I have sort of a background in the noise movement. Starting with back in the 80s with Missing Foundation. I feel like basically the whole movement of noise could have it just should have ended with that, and then whatever's happened since then is something else, which I would basically refer to everything since Missing Foundation as no genre music. But aside from noise as a music genre, you know, it's also very much a part of radio, you know, just in terms of, let's say, static and the sounds on radio. So
there's almost a battle between sounds and static on radio.
Yeah, exactly. And so in my research, you know, I started finding out more and more about noise as it relates to radio. So that became one of my focuses. And then all of those things, language, politics, noise, all of those as they relate to transmission arts, besides radio itself. So
do you want to give the audience, listeners, just a little background? You had a background in noise, but you also have a background in visual art and other mediums?
Yes. So I have basically a lifetime of tying together sound and vision, very much interlocking. And, you know, but also even beyond that, Tom, like basically off the bat, I come from a place, like a belief that there's really no separation between life and art. And so I also just find sound and noise and visual work very interrelated. But you'll hear in my piece there's some comments that do differentiate the aspects of the ear versus the eye, and what taking in things through the ear, the depths that that can go, as compared to taking in things from the eye. And I think most philosophers and thinkers on this matter agree that the ear takes things in a deeper level.
But scientists too, right?
Scientists
think that,
yeah,
that the ear just can deal with more information than the eye can deal with.
Right. Exactly. So like, yeah. So like, if you, let's say you're staring at the sea, your eyes can only see the surface of the sea, but your ears are on some level hearing the depths of it. And that's going into your body on another level. So part of this whole project is just very much about sound itself. And I've just, yeah. So back to your question, I've been interested in sound on every level my whole life. My father was a classical musician. I was always around musicians. And in the 80s, I lived in the New Music Distribution Service office, which was an experimental music distribution center created by Carla Bley. You know, I'd wake up in the morning and, like, Don Cherry was in the bathroom or something. And, you know, it was just kind of like an exposure to an incredible level of experimental musicians during that period. So yeah, I'm deeply involved in music, and I've performed in various bands, and
but
anyway.
But radio is relatively new to you?
Radio as a medium that I'm working with as an art form is a newer development for me. I would say also, you know, radio has been an integral part of my daily life as a listener, but it wasn't until in the 2000s that I got actively on and making radio. So I'm so happy to be here, and just that's what part of this project was about, was just immersing deeper as I could go and giving everyone else what I learned. So, you know, another thing I want to just talk about of what I learned is when you start looking at what's motivating a lot of transmission arts, I would say possibly all transmission artists are motivated on some level in deep political beliefs. It could be freedom of speech. I also think that a lot of transmission artists are deep environmentalists, deep ecologists, concerned about the environment. So I think it was important to sort of convey some of those politics in the piece I ended up with.
Yeah, was there ever a time in history where the rulers you had to buy your paint from the ruling class, or to do art?
Well,
I'm just saying radio is tied with more tied to political
corporate puppet strings or
regulated by the government. Doesn't regulate the paint or the chalk or the but it regulates the airwaves, which is
I would say an equivalent to that, which I've experienced and which is also why I'm very interested in breaking down boundaries and freedom of speech on every level. I've had my paintings censored and removed from exhibits in New York City, where you would think there would be a maximum level of freedom, but trust me, in the gallery system is not really, really interested in real politics.
Were your paintings inherently critical of the gallery system, or?
Well, I do have some of those. I do have some of those. Those rarely get seen. No, I'm thinking in particular of a painting I made in 1986, and it was removed from a show at La Mama Gallery in the East Village by Ellen Stewart herself, which was kind of shocking to me. That's one of the main early founders of supposedly progressive art and performance there, which it largely was. But I did a painting of the Statue of Liberty. That was the time when they refurbished the Statue of Liberty. There was a big celebration and fireworks and stuff, so they had an exhibit, and the guy who was the curator, I explained to him what I was gonna do, and he said, okay, fine. But I guess he didn't run it by Ellen Stewart, because she came into the opening and freaked out and took the painting off the wall in the middle of the opening. And at that time, I was friendly with Malcolm X's nephew, and he was there at the opening, and he couldn't believe it. The painting was a depiction of the Statue of Liberty as a gowned black wino with holding like a 40 bottle or something instead of the torch, and with planes and helicopters and bombs dropping and the whole harbor getting destroyed, and sort of the idea being while this level of poverty is happening, we're still just going to wars and not really paying attention to our own people. And I guess Ellen Stewart misconstrued my message, but Malcolm X's nephew totally got the message. It was an amazing moment. But anyway, so yeah, censorship, control of freedom of speech, whether it's on radio or in art, is a deep concern of mine. Another thing, Tom, that I found in going through transmission artists' ideas and quotes, many people refer to the idea of needing to unlearn or to rethink or to have new ways of listening. I found that just a very common thread running through a lot of people's comments. So in other words, that kind of speaks to what we're talking about a little bit, of how perhaps people's ears have been sort of desensitized to anything outside of a certain spectrum. And I think a lot of transmission artists are trying to break out of that and provide people with other ways of hearing and thinking. So, you know, it was just so complicated, Tom, because, like, basically I could pick any topic. Like, you could say pirate radio. That could be, like, 30 million hour episodes of just on that, you know?
Oh, yeah, you can break it down further. I mean, you can just do pirate radio on ships.
Yeah.
And then that's a whole day's programming.
Yeah. So it was kind of crazy. I was trying to do this overall umbrella approach and encompass as much as I could. So I just ended up having to be, as I said earlier, it's a certain level of chance of what fell across my eye, what I ended up recording. Then I gathered up all these things and assembled them into this piece called Research. And then that process was also somewhat random. You'll hear some threads of connectivity, like in one section where it might be more about the politics of radio, and another section that's more about noise. So there's a little bit of, like, division, but overall, you know, I could do this the rest of my life, and each one that I made would be different. So it was pretty exciting. The other thing, going back to sort of my background in visual art, you know, like that painting of the Statue of Liberty, and then a lot of paintings I was doing at that time were these sort of really dense, complex narratives. And so it really is interesting for me in my own artistic growth to sort of examine, like, where I'm at now making things on radio. In a way, it makes complete sense because I'm also making these very dense, complex narratives. You know, like on my show, The Nothing Is Real Radio Hour, the topics I've covered have been reality, consciousness, capitalism, you know. And so now I'm doing, like, this program, Research, is radio itself. So I'm not afraid to take on a broad thing and just, like, see where it goes.
So what was the most surprising thing you uncovered in your research? Or was there any surprises?
There were numerous surprises. One quote, you know, and people, I don't want to give any spoilers, but I'm going to give a little bit of one here. You know, I think people think of John Cage and his work in radio and sound as, you know, mostly being about silence. And I found this great quote from him where he's talking about how much he loves things really, really loud. And so he really appreciates the whole spectrum. And I enjoyed reading that. I think he would probably be present at numerous, again, I hate the word noise, but noise shows these days, if he were around.
Well, he was the first super prominent person to say that you can make any, you know, in the 20th century, I guess, say, that you could make any sound or noise, and it could be musical or it could be interesting to listen to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Like, again, about rethinking what is noise and opening up your mind to the idea that something that you may have been trained to believe is agitating you, if you just switch the channels of your mind around a little bit, you can start to hear things in a more beautiful way. Like, I think that's really what living in the time I lived in New York City, one of the greatest things that happened to me was I lived at the corner of Broadway and Broome Street, which was a main truck thoroughfare. And so the noise was just constant there. And I learned to just turn it around and see the whole city as one big giant symphony of sound. And I actually did a huge giant, like 100-foot long mural on our roof about that. But just, yeah, it's about switching the channels of your brain, is sort of what Cage was saying, and just seeing all sounds as something potentially, I don't want to use the word beautiful, but enlightening. So, yeah, I think I just love all sounds, really. You know, I love nature sounds. When I was out here at the Wave Farm, it was great to just be here with the crickets and the birds and the frogs. And I take a lot of my cues from nature, but I also really, really enjoy industrial machine sounds. And yeah.
Do you I think you brought some things. Do you want to play something to give us an example of some sounds that you appreciate?
Let's see. What do I have queued up? I think what I have queued up is like actually on a whole nother note of some of the earliest music I heard that inspired me, which is kind of off the topic of our conversation, but we could play it anyway. And it does relate to my later in life developing political beliefs. And so when I was a little kid, the first record I got was a Sly and the Family Stone record, which my older brother gave me. Little did he know, like, that was going to have... it was the one called There's a Riot Going On. And that just had such a profound effect on my thinking, even as a little kid, and I still have that record today. So,
you and Prince.
Yeah. Me and Prince really, really
dug that record.
Appreciated Sly. let's see. So maybe we could play. Let's play something a little funky, and then we could get into maybe some other noisier stuff.
All right. Wait, should I press a button or something?
Yeah, I think that CD player's queued up.
Dance to the music. Keep on dancing.
we're back with Sam Sebrin, artist Sam Sebrin, talking about his artist in residence at the Wave Farm, where he studied about transmission art and radio art. And what do you want to tell us about now, Sam?
I wanted to go back a little bit to, you know, we're kind of like now getting into the territory of sort of influences and things that have inspired me. And again, that's like something that you could go on and on, because at any different time in your life or in my life, like, the influences are different and they change and mutate and influence each other. But anyway, I would say, like, you know, going back to sort of the politics of radio and the politics of free speech and the art world, one of the groups I've been into for the last few years is the Guerrilla Art Action Group. And I have their book here with me, their original book. And I was just going to read, sort of to give people an idea that, like, I don't think a lot of people realize that once upon a time, the museums were much more approachable. And if you look at the 60s and 70s, there's so many artists kind of that you might not have heard of that were in shows and museums, because it was much easier to approach a museum. It wasn't some giant corporate structure that an artist couldn't walk into or need some really high level of connections to get into. But even at that time, the Guerrilla Art Action Group was upset on a lot of levels with the Museum of Modern Art. And they were doing actions all the time. This one is a manifesto from 1969. And I'll just read a couple of the points. It's got 3 points. Number one, we demand that the Museum of Modern Art sell the equivalent of $1 million worth of artworks from their collection, and that the money be given to the poor of all races of this country, the money to be used by those communities and for those communities without any interference or attached conditions. Number two, we demand that the Museum of Modern Art decentralize its power structure to a point of communalization. And then there's more details, but I'm just trying to give folks an idea. The number three, we demand that the Museum of Modern Art be closed until the end of the war in Vietnam, because the Guerrilla Art Action Group saw many connections to the elites in the art world and to the perpetual war mongering. So, that's an influence that I read a lot about, and people will hear some of Guerrilla Art Action Group in my piece later. You know, another thing that really kind of blew my mind wide open, a combination of noise and sound and art and machines in the 80s, was I first saw Survival Research Laboratories from California. These guys that make these really far out machines that they build, that then they do a performance with the machines that are operating, seemingly taking on their own life and movements. And they would do them sometimes out in parking lots. Sometimes they did them indoors, but usually they did them outdoors. Probably a lot of our listeners are familiar with Survival Research Laboratories, but I got to see them and meet Mark Pauline and talk to him a little bit. And that was such a mind-opening experience, because when you're there at those things live, it can be very scary when those machines are coming at you. Even though they have barricades, there is the feeling that the machine's going to break through the barricade. And so it's almost warlike in a way. But they're making numerous commentaries. But anyway, I think we have a clip of some Survival Research Laboratory stuff. Let's listen to that one.
Oh, it's buzzing. I don't know. Is it going to play? Let's see. Hopefully too much buzz there. Maybe I can get it here.
Hang on, everybody. So, in the meantime, I could play another sort of influential thing for me early on in the punk rock world was, again, ideas of freedom of speech and expanding possibilities. And I think one of the greatest examples of that that came out of punk rock was the Minutemen, who believed that punk could be anything. They were sort of breaking down some of the other more dogmatic ideas within punk and, in my opinion, creating some of the most free and open music. I'll play a couple of tunes from the Minutemen while we're getting some Survival Research Laboratory lined up.
You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM. All right, you're listening to the Saturday Afternoon Show with artist Sam Sebrin, who's been an artist in residence at the Wave Farm and is now talking about his radio research.
Thanks, Tom. We're talking about the radio research, and I'm just also tossing out a few kind of random influences from different parts of my life. I've also had some really great been fortunate to have some really great mentors at various parts of my life. But let's see, we were trying to come up, get this clip pulled up from Survival Research Laboratory. And it's, so it's got some sounds from the machines, and then it's got a little interview with Mark Pauline.
Yeah, hit the space bar.
Thank you. mean, we basically take work that other people have done with machines, you know, which to me is sort of, people have pretty much relegated machines to this sort of static and very practical lifestyle. I mean, you know, it's sort of like people look at machines the same way they look at other people, or they were able to in the past. They look at them as a form of slaves. And they use them to perform the things that they either can't do or don't want to do. And, kind of what we're involved is, to a degree, a sort of a mechanical, electrical, whatever, a liberation front for devices. And, to a degree, you could say that. We sort of rearrange these devices into functions that, at least for us, are more interesting for them. You know, and I can only speak for machines, since they don't, at this point, seem to be able to speak for themselves.
What characterizes the Reagan's machine?
What characterizes the Reagan's machine? Flatness. Flatness. All designed to be flat and even, so that you could run it through a Xerox machine. But, Reagan's machine is ultimately it's like the perfect representation of government by television commercial. Or by media, really. By corporation, really. I mean, it's corporate government, you know. Corporate government, the hallmarks of a corporate government, of course, would be the inability for accountability, an inability to be accounted, you know, to take responsibility. I mean, there's no way that you can put responsibility on a corporation, you see, because it's not a single person. I mean, they use a lot of tricks. They use basically... Governments use the same. The Reagan administration figured out finally, for the first time, that if you operate a government as a corporation, you can do things that are impossible to do any other way. You can truly control a society. You know, you don't try to operate as a political machine. You operate as a corporate machine, and that's obviously a discovery that SRL has made too. And we exist, as a sort of a mechanism to. Do experiments in operating as creative people in terms of corporate structure. And, I think that that's really one of the only ways to get a lot of freedom to really make any kind of dramatic impact.
All right. Now, what was that, Sam?
That was Mark Pauline from Survival Research Laboratory. Again, the theme of freedom comes through in so much art and all different mediums, and you know, he's talking about media, and of which radio is a big part, and so Survival Research Laboratory was a big influence on my thinking, and it kind of relates to what we're going to hear pretty soon in my piece, Research. Let's continue with some more music, you think?
Sure.
Just continuing with various influences. The No Wave movement was also a big eye-opener for me early on. I felt like they were taking a lot of cues from free jazz and just trying to break apart any kind of pre-existing musical notions. I'm really responding to anybody who's trying to forge new territory. That's what I find really inspiring, you know, especially as we're now in this sort of age of regurgitations. Let's see. Is number 19, track number 19.
On which one?
On CD1 there.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. That was DNA with the song called Detached from the late 70s. That was something that you would not hear on the radio. Definitely that was not radio material in the late 70s. Let's see. What do you think, Tom? Can we go with keep going with some more music here? Moving into the 90s was a time that I had a band called Splotch, and in New York City, we made a couple of records on Menlo Park Recordings that were produced by Tom Smith of To Live and Shave in L.A. We frequently played with To Live and Shave in L.A. Tom Smith was a good friend and someone who's thinking I always wanted to hear what he was up to. He very much would agree with me on the noise label as being obsolete. He actually considers that genre itself is obsolete. But I think he's really a pioneer, iconoclast of extreme sounds. And let me pass this over to you, Tom. Sorry, folks, we're just kind of winging it here a little bit. Let's go with track. How much time do we have? We don't have that much time. Let's go with track 4.
Dreamed of the calm I was, remarkably hard, and solid about the parietal bone. I sat out at your house from the tube, waters. Whoa, for the cause of policemen's daughters who sin and day and night work a witchcraft when the sulfur we perform as and that. Yeah, the power has become my scum, a game of bloody triathlon, the dust of the dose, a repugnant of pig of shame. Yay! Woo! The the tripton bag. Stutter, a crippled innocent legend. The elderly shack who served as a chaplain. Another pick up a killer. Stutter.
another morphine agony answer. Proclaims another morphine agony. Proclaims a night of dread. Giant man shouts as the doze. Repugnant to pig obtained.
All right, we're back on the Saturday afternoon show. Sam, what was that?
That was To Live and Shave in L.A. from their record God and Country Rally, and that song was called He Had the Police Obtain.
All right, and I'm Tom Rowe, and we're speaking to artist Sam Seaborn, who's been artist in residence the last couple of weeks at Wave Farm and is about to present his radio research.
Yes, so coming up... in the 5 to 6 hour, we're going to hear the results of my residency program here, researching transmission arts and radio arts and sound art and everything in between and around all of that, as much as I could, as deeply as I could. But it's, again, it's a pretty overwhelming task. So on some level, there might be a degree of absurdity involved that you might hear in the piece. You'll hear some of the, you'll hear some other To Live and Shave in L.A. mixed into the piece, as well as numerous transmission artists sprinkled throughout in the background or as whole pieces, plus many, many quotes from many, many different transmission artists. The quotes are all identified in the piece. That's to reflect the idea of research. When I came here, my first instinct was just to open books and start writing, copying down people's thoughts and quotes, and that ended up being the direction that the piece took of compiling various quotes and sounds. So I'm really, really, really excited about this piece, and I'm really grateful to have had the opportunity to come here and make it. And I don't know. I hope people enjoy it. Some of the sounds in the background, you'll hear identified at the end who they were, but for instance, there's some things by Guy Debord, author of Society of the Spectacle. There's some Dada sounds, Situationists and Dadaists, very much connected. There's everything from William Burroughs to Sesame Street. Henry Jacobs is one of my favorite sound people, music makers, as well as many of our own Wave Farm artists like Matt Bua, Tom Rowe, Max Goldfarb, Tiana Kennedy. I just try to put in as many people as I could, but it's only an hour. So there's only so much I could fit. There's the U.S. government Morse code, Anna Fritz, Aeolian organ, Lazaro Valiente, who did the piece with police cars. I love that piece. Had to get that in there somehow.
All right, well, we've got to get the news first, so we should probably get to it now. So why don't you finish up the introduction, and I'll go in the other room and get things going.
Okay, so, yeah, as soon as we're done with the news... people are going to be hearing this brand new piece, just finished at 4 a.m. this morning, actually, after about a month and a half of work. And it's called Research. And it's about 58 minutes long. and it will take you through a variety of topics involving transmission art and radio art.
All right, well, that will be in just a second after the local news and the radio news. Stay tuned for radio research from Sam Sebrin on WGXC.
Thanks, Tom.